This is Bob Barba reading from my piece, Three Bakeries. This is from the second bakery, the section entitled The Night Baker. Near the end of my first year at Clearflower, I volunteered to be the night baker when we were approached by a new client who wanted as much bread for themselves each day as we had been making for seven smaller clients up to that point, and so we quickly had to double our capacity and add a shift. Everyone else had a husband or partner to go home to, and since I did not, I became the night baker. Immediately, I learned that I loved working nights and having my days free, and though I missed the conversation, I came to love baking and the art of the oven man even more than I had the shaping of the loaves. I would come in at 4 p.m. when almost all the bread was shaped and had been proofing already for a few hours. The sourdough would be in a proofing cabinet under steam in winter, perhaps in the walk-in refrigerator in the summer, and I would make myself a cup of coffee and begin the night-long orchestration of bringing along each 20-pan rack of bread at the right moment, trying never to have an empty oven, but neither wanting to rush any unready loaf into the oven's heat. We all took this very seriously, this quest for perfection, but the fact was, and I was keenly aware of this, that although many distinct things had to happen just right throughout the day for a loaf to work, it had to be mixed perfectly, raised patiently and at the right temperature, punched down at just the right moment, cut and scaled only when it was ready, shaped tightly but gently. It could all be negated by my carelessness or impatience. If a rack of bread were ready 20 minutes before I had the oven space for it, the entire rack might overproof, and the resulting flaccid baguettes would shame me throughout the night. Conversely, if I rushed and put a batch in 20 minutes early, the loaves would burst when they first hit the oven's heat and rip open, destroying the crust that was our trademark. I worked with my back to the large six-shelf rotating rack oven, prepping on a large wooden counter five sheet pans of six baguettes each, or six rounds, or four longs. Each loaf received a quick brush with an egg white and water wash to give the finished crust a deeper golden glaze, and then each loaf was scored with a razor blade so as to control for the first burst of yeast activity when the loaves went into the oven's very high heat, called oven spring in the trade. Without these scores, the crust would burst in unpredictable ways, and so the scores were both decorative and functional. Each baker had his or her own slight variation on a few classic themes. Mine was usually the alternating, radiating slashes that would, when open, suggest an ear of wheat. Once these five pans were loaded, I'd take another five from the proofed rack, prep them, load them, and so on, until the oven was full again. I would keep this up frantically most nights, always racing, unloading an entire oven of 150 baguettes and rolling them over near the open double screen doors to cool, and then egg wash and score another 150 and quickly load the oven so as not to lose too much heat through the open door, and then 20 minutes of counting, sorting, bagging, sweeping before it started up again. On summer nights, this was best. With all the doors open and something good on the cassette player loud. For me, this was Richard Thompson's Hand of Kindness for an embarrassingly long time. And hundreds of loaves cooling on the fans, their crust making a barely audible crackling sound, and the smell wafting out onto the street and permeating the neighborhood. People would walk by on their way from the Commonwealth Avenue T-line and be taken by it. You would hear them exclaim to one another about how good it smelled, how they were lucky to live in such a neighborhood, and often they would stand in the doorway and ask, "You don't mind if we just stand here for a few minutes and smell this, do you?" Sometimes they would plead through the open screen door to be allowed to buy a fresh loaf, though the retail operation closed at 6 p.m. It was satisfying to turn away the wealthy residents of Brookline, used to getting all they wanted, and thrilling to occasionally make the fine gesture of letting the homeless guy from the Alston side have a baguette for nothing. He did not come often, knew better than to push his luck, but when he did turn up at the door and shouted into the lighted bakery, "Hey, brother, can you spare a loaf of that tasty French stick?" it was deeply satisfying to flick the latch on the screen doors and pass one out into the night to him. And in the summer, just before Eddie's closed at 11 p.m., I would go next door and buy a single bottle of Bass Ale and climb up with it onto the stacks of 100-pound bags of King Arthur unbleached white bread flour up high near the ceiling, and eat a hot baguette with sweet butter, and drink that cold beer, and look down on close to 1,000 loaves of bread cooling or standing upright in emptied flour bags, waiting for the drivers to come and get them at 5 a.m. and take them out to the waiting city. It was the last time I knew perfection, knew what it was to work willingly, even enthusiastically, at something, knowing as I did that perfection was possible every day. It was only possible because there were just 5 of us, and we all loved the bread and one another. It was only possible because there were only 4 or 5 ingredients, flour, water, salt, yeast, maybe something sweet. It was only possible because Christy had convinced us it was possible and taught us how to mix and shape and bake it in order to make it happen. And it was possible every day. It didn't happen every day, but it was possible every day. And mostly, and this is what breaks my heart, it was possible because we all, even I swear to God, me, believed it was possible.